Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 32 of the EFG Daily Commute. My name is Stephen Dutzman, and I am your host. I am also the founder of EngageFamilyGaming.com. That is a website on the internet where parents like myself and my co-hosts come together to give families the information they need to get their family game on. It's Wednesday, the week before Christmas, so I hope everybody is ready. If you're not, I hope you are ready to get ready, because we don't have much time. So I am driving into work today to our holiday party, and I had a suggestion given to me by a longtime friend by the name of Ray. He gave some suggestions for topics for the EFG Daily Commute, and I'm going to run with some of those. So the first one that I'm going to go with is he wanted some tips for the budding game designers in our life. I'm going to add to that content creators, because every kid on earth right now wants to either make games or make content on the internet. They want to be a YouTuber. And so I want to give some tips for parents who have kids with those kind of creative goals in mind. And I'll do two steps. First is, you know, kind of advice that you can give them. And advice for you, but also I'm gonna follow it up afterwards with, like, you know, stuff, because now is the time where gift ideas are on people's minds, and some of these suggestions that I have are things that you can pick up at, like, the dollar store, and trust me, it'll be good. So, all right, the first and biggest piece of advice that I have for parents whose children want to be game designers or content creators, or really have any kind of creative aspirations. My biggest advice is encourage that creative mindset. And I know that sounds super patronizing, like, well, of course you want us to encourage it, of course we should encourage it. No, what I mean is, like, actually encourage it. Celebrate their creativity. There's two reasons for that. One, the world needs great artists. The world needs great game designers. They need great television producers. Every show, game, or, you know, movie or album you have listened to has been created by someone who had a creative spirit, and that creative spirit was nurtured in some way. And so encouraging and celebrating creativity, who knows what your kids will be able to accomplish. And it could be crazy things. But, I mean, we all know that those pie-in-the-sky kind of dreams, you know, being a famous singer or a professional athlete, and we know that those are not very likely, just mathematically speaking. The good news is a creative mind and a creative spirit is useful everywhere. So teaching our children to be creative in their own, you know, when they're creating game worlds or making movies, like, that creative spirit is valuable in other places, right? It encourages them and gives them the ability to value thinking outside the box and trying to come up with unusual solutions. So the reality is, encouraging your son or your daughter to create a Dungeons and Dragons campaign for your family is a significant piece of game design work, right? And a fun family activity, but also that teaches them how to be organized and how to, you know, think of solutions to problems that they have created themselves, right? Like, you know, you painted the dungeon, the party into a corner. How do you fix that? How do you make something more engaging and interesting? Like, those are questions that kids are going to have to teach themselves. They're going to have to figure out the answer to while they're doing all this work. And those are useful skills in everything. So I think that's the first piece. Encourage your children to be creative. Don't dismiss it as a waste of time. celebrate this creative pursuit. That's number one. Another piece is, and I think this is probably the second most important thing, if your children want to create, they need to, the best thing you could possibly do is encourage them to be diverse in the types of things they are consuming. For example, if your child wants to be a poet, it is a very good idea for them to read more than one kind of poetry. So helping them find books that have, you know, that are by a variety of different authors, that have a variety of different, you know, methods of, you know, their craft, will only make them better at what they do. And beyond that, it will be enriching for them. If they want to make movies, then, I mean, really, if they want to be an animator, then find examples of good animation, and there are plenty of them. Google it up, and watch them with them. Encourage that. Like, don't just, if they want to be an animator, they should not just watch Naruto. They should watch everything. And you should encourage that. You know, maybe they should watch the new Voltron, or maybe they should watch the new Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with a specific eye towards the animation, that type of thing. Just encourage them to be diverse in what they do. And I mean that in multiple senses, right? Like, especially if they're creating content. If they want to create content, like, for YouTube, or if they want to write, they should consume content by people who are different from them. If you have a boy who wants to make a YouTube channel, he should absolutely find a fashion blogger and watch their stuff. And I know that sounds, not watch everything, right? But like, they should be aware of how that content is created. And for multiple reasons. A big piece of it is it helps them understand what other people's points of view are, right? There are, and the good news about, you know, content is that there is so much. It should not be hard for them to find content that is not created by a kid that is just like them. And I say the same thing. If you have a girl who wants to be a YouTuber, it is at least somewhat of a good idea. It's definitely easier for her to find somebody that is different from her. Find a guy that is acceptable and not, man, some of the guys on the internet are creepy, but, I mean, there are plenty of wholesome dudes that make content on the internet. You may just have to look for them. And so, I encourage that. Look at different kinds of YouTube videos. And again, it's all about diversity. And I mean that from a point of view perspective, like different people, but also different kinds of content. Are they watching animations? Are they watching, you know, just person in front of a green screen? Are they watching like a traditional vlog where it's just someone sitting in their bedroom with lots of jump cuts? You know, lots of options there, but encouraging them to broaden their horizon. My son Jake has said forever, I just want to be a YouTuber. That's what I want to do. And I get it, because it sounds fun. He can't just watch Mr. Beast and be well-rounded enough to do a good job. And also, you know, Mr. Beast can be kind of obnoxious. So kind of broadening his horizons has been challenging, but it's been valuable because he sees the way different people do work. So that's the second piece. It's encouraging people to, you know, kind of consume more stuff. From a game perspective, if you have a kid that really wants to make video games, they should not only play games in the genre they want to make. And this is a specific rule. If my oldest wanted to make JRPGs, that's all he wanted to do. He wanted to make the next Final Fantasy game. Well, first of all, Final Fantasy doesn't even, you know, Square Enix doesn't even really make the next Final Fantasy game. But they should play sports games and action games and fighting games and puzzle games and experimental indie games. And they should mess around with VR. And they should play different stuff. The same goes with board games. If your kid wants to be the next big board game designer, wants to be the next Richard Garfield, the next Rob Daviau, the next Eric Lang, totally acceptable. Board games are a growing hobby, and I see this is not a bubble. I do not see board games slowing down anytime soon. So this is where, if they want to make a dude on the map, you know, kind of miniatures game, that's great. They should play chess. They should play abstract games like Reef. They should play card games. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, every game designer I know works on, you know, multiple different games, using multiple different mediums and forms all at once. So, they are, you know, they are constantly coming up with different ideas, and the very good ones are able to work, with a project, meaning they are given something to do and they can make a game. Or they can help provide feedback to other people on their game. And if you only know how to make a dudes on a map miniatures game kind of fun, it's going to be really hard to provide constructive feedback to your peers and in turn get constructive feedback from them. And also, it means that you're kind of one-dimensional, and you really, it's difficult to do that in today's marketplace, and I would presume it would be even harder in the marketplace of the future, because everybody kind of just does everything for the most part. And so being aware of the different kind of board games and how they work, it's a good idea, because it forces you to understand all these different mechanics and how they work and what makes them fun. And maybe you'll want to make a miniatures game that has card elements. And if you didn't play a lot of card games, you wouldn't know the intricacies of, like, what does it mean if you have to shuffle the deck in between draws? Like, what does that mean? What does that change? Etc. So those are my kind of, those are my big two pieces of advice, as far as, like, attitude. Encourage the creativity. Like, embrace it, celebrate it, and participate in it too, right? As best you can. And then the second piece is encourage them to do more than just read or watch or design the one thing they want to do. Broaden their horizons and consume what they want to create. That's the only way you're going to learn from other people. So, those are my two kind of attitude advice pieces. And I think those somewhat go without saying, but I think it's certainly valuable to hear. Next, let's talk about, like, the stuff, right? If they want to be an artist or if they want to be a writer, then those are relatively straightforward, right? You know, art supplies, we know what to do with that. If a kid wants to make games, what do we get them? I'm going to give you some quick tips on how to whip up a board game design toolkit that you could give to a child who wants to be a board game designer, and give them kind of free reign. The first thing is, they need pieces. They need, like, stuff, right? One of the biggest challenges that a lot of board game designers face is they have difficulty making prototypes. And learning how to make a prototype is a challenging step. So here's some things that would fit very well in a prototyper's toolkit. One is decks of playing cards. These are great because they're cheap, but also because they are, you know, even if you decide to bail on using them for game design tools, they are still usable as playing cards. So that's kind of step one, decks of playing cards. One of the first game design, you know, I actually read a lot about, you know, advice that game designers give to other budding game designers. And one of the first things they said was to try and create something that is incredibly simple and uses just cards and as few cards as possible and make it interesting. So take one suit of cards and make a game out of it. That's hard, but that's an interesting design challenge. And the easiest way to do that is to have cards. The good news is you can get them at the dollar store. You can buy them on Amazon by the case, however you want to handle it. But they are good to have. They are useful. I always recommend getting cards that have multiple different... Make it so that they're not all the same, but make sure that there are some that are all the same. The reason for that is, you know, there's only a specific set and number of cards in a standard deck of playing cards, but someone might want to play a game that has 200 cards in it, and you may need all of the card backs to match. So keep that in mind, you know, maybe buy, you know, four packs of one set. And again, you're buying these at the dollar store, so they're going to be relatively inexpensive. Another great source for chits and tokens and things like that are poker chips and chess pieces and checkers, all of which are also things that can be purchased at a dollar store. Again, these things don't need to be final quality components. So buying a set or a box of poker chips gives you a bunch of tokens in a bunch of different colors, and chess pieces, and, you know, give you a bunch of different shapes of different colors. Same thing with checkers. The cool thing about poker chips, actually, to add extra to it, is that they can be written on or drawn on with a Sharpie, which is the next piece of advice. Get a good, fine-tipped Sharpie. Now, this is obviously going to be age-dependent. However, having a Sharpie will give them the ability to write on the different pieces to try and, you know, design them. Maybe you take the poker chips and give them number values, or maybe you need to write a name on it to represent. Who knows? It gives you a lot of space. And that's one of the reasons why I recommend poker chips, because oftentimes they're relatively big. Some other... you know, those are like the big pieces, right? Also, dice, you know, a couple sets of Dungeons & Dragons dice. I am sure if you are a gamer yourself, you have some sets of Dungeons & Dragons dice that you bought that you have since graduated from. Perhaps they're not rolling well enough for you. Old dice work perfectly because they are also, they can be used as tokens, as figures, but also as literal dice in a game if your kid wants to use them. So those are, like, all of those kind of items put inside a nice Tupperware tub with a ceiling lid, and you can get those at, like, the grocery store, will make a pretty cool basis for a, you know, like, the tokens and the cards and, like, the stuff that would go along with making a board game. But now you might be thinking to yourself, Steve, so unless they're making a card game, I don't know what all this stuff is. What do we do with a board? Well, there's a number of different ways to do that. But my recommendation is checkerboards. I mean, if you're getting checkerboards and chess pieces, getting them, including with them, with that box, the checkerboard or the chessboard that came with the pieces, at the very least, that gives them a grid. Now, they may want to create something that doesn't involve a grid. Maybe they want to use a path that is, that's kind of like Candyland, that, you know, moves around a board in like a winding path. My next piece of advice is go to a Once Upon a Child or a thrift store, and you can actually go and buy, and sometimes it's even at tag sales or things like that, buy older board games, and just take them apart, or find older board games that maybe you were holding on to them for a rainy day, or maybe your kids destroyed them and they're just not in good shape anymore. Replace their old board games. You know, maybe they have Chutes and Ladders or Candyland from when they were a kid and they don't want to play it anymore. Or maybe they do, buy them a new copy of Candyland and take their other piece, their other game, and bam, look at all those components. They have a neat board with colorful figures and a neat path. They get whatever the standees were. And also those cards, which the reality is those cards are relatively well made and they have little squares of color on them. Who knows what a creative mind would do with those kind of components. The same goes for your old Risk set, right? If you had an old Risk game or things like that. Basically, finding games that either you have easy access to or that you could replace and give them. Monopoly, you know, is another example that comes right to mind, is a game that has a number of, I mean, you have the little metal pieces that could be used as tokens, but also it has a pair of dice that are easy to use without having to take them from another set. Also, it has money. Like, Monopoly money could be valuable, right? I mean, if you're using a game that has monetary, if they're designing a game that has resources, Monopoly money is a great source. And if you have a Monopoly game that nobody's ever going to play again, save yourself the shelf space. Get, you know, and they can use the board for whatever. So that is, and also the board is valuable, even though maybe the kid, maybe they don't want to make a game that is, you know, following the path of Monopoly, but it's a decent sized folding board. There's really nothing saying that you couldn't spray paint it or cover it up with contact paper, and bam, all of a sudden it's a blank board. You know, so that's the next piece, right? So, you know, getting some of those components from like a dollar store, you know, buying some of them on Amazon. There is, if you want to go next level, there is, it's actually on Amazon. It's called the White Box, and it is a literally just a box of high-end board game components. Little wooden cubes and tokens and meeples and, you know, stuff like that. Very cool. Very cool. It's just a little expensive. You know, for a kid that's younger, that is just making jokes about how they want to make games or has tried to tear apart some of your other games, like giving them this is a neat distraction and it might be fun for them. I would save the White Box for maybe older kids who have kind of graduated from and need more pieces than the dollar store accoutrement. So that's for board game designers. Now let's talk about if they want to make video games. The very best thing that you can do to help encourage and support a kid that wants to make video games is to let them make video games. There are a number of tools that are available. The first is, you know, there are games like Scratch and other websites like that where they can literally make a game. From top to bottom with assets, and they can even make it an app and kind of store it themselves. Super rad. And that's a thing they can do. My oldest son made a Taco Ninja game in an afternoon. So let them make video games. If they want to make the next great JRPG, there is literally a RPG maker. There's one on 3DS called RPG Maker Faye, but also there is an RPG Maker program available on Steam. It is somewhat pricey, however, it often, if you make, put it on your, if you have a Steam account and you use Steam regularly, put it on your Steam wish list. Occasionally it goes on for sale very inexpensively. You know, I've seen it for $6 before. Normally it's about 70, which is not infinity dollars, but it's not free either. But I've seen it for less than 10, at least a couple of times in the last couple of years. So, you know, and those are robust toolkits where you are using tile sets and basically creating the next Final Fantasy VI. And it, you can choose music and design monsters and, you know, it gives you a lot of freedom. So that's my advice for board game or for video game creators. Let them make stuff. You know, as they get older and they want to make things that are a little bit more, you know, as they gain skill, there are other tool sets that they'll have available to them. But if they're young, buy them a tutorial guide for Scratch and let them just make some games. And Scratch is an online tool set. It's free to use. It's pretty great. So that's the video games. Now, what do you do if your kid wants to make YouTube videos? That sounds awesome to me. But here's what I would recommend that you do. Buy them a tripod. If they have a phone, then they already have all of the camera that they need. Unless you bought them a specifically low-end phone that you know has a bad camera, they have the camera that they need on their cell phone. So if they're a teenager and they have one of those, they don't need a fancy webcam or a fancy computer for rendering or anything like that. What they need, especially if they want to be a vlogger, is a tripod, a good tripod, and an adapter for a phone. So they can put the phone on it, they can learn to aim it at themselves, and they can learn how to talk into the camera. If they have a Facebook account, they can literally create a Facebook account, make a Facebook page for themselves, and start creating content immediately. And all that content can be uploaded onto YouTube with very little work. That's my the best like thing you can get for someone that wants to be a YouTuber is a tripod, because that I've messed around a lot trying to find the right one. Getting them a good tripod will absolutely help them. Another thing that they may need, especially if they're concerned about lighting, you know, if you have maybe someone that wants to do beauty vlogs or, you know, makeup tutorials, which is a big thing, is a light ring. Now, what a light ring is, if you go on Amazon, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because it'll show you. But basically what it is, a light ring is a ring of LED lights that sits on that attaches to a tripod and sits behind a phone and provides even and high quality lighting that you would use while you were recording vlogs. It makes it so that videos look better. It's very important. Lighting is super important for folks that are doing things like, you know, makeup tutorials, be it a beauty advice thing, or if they're doing like horror makeup or, you know, cosplay advice. Lighting is important because details are there. I don't necessarily panic about the lighting for a lot of my videos because I'm just talking about board games and video games, right? But even I know that I need to get a video light, a circle light rather. So that's a good thing, and they're relatively inexpensive, especially ones that are designed to be used with cell phones. There are even some that actually will clip on to a cell phone so you can use it. They're like selfie light cases. And I know some of that sounds kind of silly, like, you know, who needs that stuff? It actually makes a difference. If they don't own a selfie stick or something similar to that, that is also a useful tool for someone that wants to create content. Maybe they just want to take pictures and put them up on Instagram. Having a tripod and also having a selfie stick, or, you know, things like that, or a monopod, like having these different tools to help them create better content will be so awesome for them if that's something that they want to do. And all of them, you know, there are $1,000 tripods, but there are also like $20 tripods that work just as fine, and they will bring their content up to the next level without you needing to spend $1 million. So, those are some of my tips. I know I missed something, right? Because I don't have every, you know, I can't possibly think of everything. We've only been talking for about a half hour. So, if you have advice for those same budding game designers, I'm going to share this in the Engage Family Gaming community, and I'd love you to join there. Do that by going to engagefamilygaming.community, or engagefamilygaming.com/community. I don't know why I screwed that up. Join the conversation. Share your tips for the budding game designers in your life. So I hope you have a wonderful day. I am at the office now. So I hope you have a great day. I will talk to you tomorrow. And until then, don't forget to get your family game on. We'll see you soon. Bye.